All right. For those of you that don't know, Pastor Tim is in, well, he's in the mainland right now. His cousin died and went to be with the Lord, and he's spending some time with his family. And he asked me to preach this week. So I got a sermon for you guys, and I got some notes. If I could have the ushers come one more time and pass some of these out. And I'll help real quick, too. Yep. Okay. Thank you. All right. And I don't know if you guys will need pens, but I have them as well. Yeah, I'm sorry. I might as well just teach you something.
No.
I'll at least try. Huh?
Yeah.
42 of them.
Thanks.
Oh. I'll take care of the pens.
All right. Thanks, sir. Pass you one of those. Cool. So the sermon title is The First Step to Freedom. And the sermon series is called The Road to Recovery, Part 1. And it's, I got the sermon from, his name is, wait, it's not on here. Why? Rick Warren. I don't know why it's not on that part. Pastor Rick Warren from Saddleback Church in California. And once everybody got the paper, I will go ahead and start because I can't say where the information will just pop in. Try and catch it while you can. Some of it will be on the screen. All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you. All right. Recently, a father was trying to take a nap on a Sunday afternoon. In his living room, and his little boy kept bugging him, saying, "Daddy, I'm bored." So his father tried to make up a game. He found a picture of a globe in the newspaper, a picture of the world. And he ripped it out and tore it up into about 50 pieces. And he said, "Son, this is a puzzle. I want you to put it all back together." And then so he laid back down thinking, "Hey, I'm going to get about an hour and a half, 2 hours of uninterrupted sleep." And in about 15 minutes, the boy comes and says, "Daddy, I've got it all finished. I put it all together." And he says, "You're kidding. How did you do that?" And he said, "Well, there was a picture of a person on the back of the newspaper. And when I got that person put all together, the world looked just fine." We're beginning a new series today I'm calling The Road to Recovery. It's going to work on your person. It's amazing how much better the world looks when your person is put together in the right way. We're going to talk in this series about how to overcome the hurts in your life, the habits that are messing up your life, and the hang-ups that have caused pain. Your hurts, habits, and hang-ups. The verse I've chosen for our theme in our series is Isaiah 57:18, and God's speaking. All the verses that I'm quoting through here are all from GNB. "I have seen how they acted, but I will heal them. I will lead them. I will help them, and I will comfort them, those who mourn. I will offer peace to all near and far. This is the great promise of God." Notice there are five parts to recovery that God wants to do in your life. First, if you've been hurt, God says, "I want to heal you." If you're confused, he says, "Hey, I want to lead you." If you've ever felt helpless or to change something, God says, "I want to help you do that." If you've ever felt no one understands your problem, he says, "I want to comfort you." If you feel anxious and worried and afraid, he says, "I want to offer you peace." The fact is, life is tough. And we live in an imperfect world. We're hurt by other people, and we hurt ourselves, and we hurt other people. The Bible says all have sinned. And that means that none of us are perfect. Excuse me. We've all blown it. We've all made mistakes. We hurt, and we've hurt others. This series is for everybody. Everyone in this room needs recovery unless you've lived a perfect life. But if you haven't lived a perfect life, if you haven't been hurt, if you've ever had a hang-up or a habit that you'd like to get rid of, then you need recovery. What do you need recovery from? The good news is this. Regardless of what the problem you need recovery from, whether it's emotional or financial, relational, spiritual, sexual, or whatever, regardless what you need recovery from, the steps to recovery are always the same. The principles for recovery are found in the Bible. It's the original recovery manual. In 1935, a couple of guys formulated, based on the scriptures, what are now known as the classic 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's basically used by hundreds of recovery groups. 20 million Americans are in recovery every week, and there are over 500,000 groups, or different groups, that are using God's word as its basis. I have summarized these principles of recovery around the word recovery. We'll take a look at each letter. I'm trying to convince Tim to let me do 8 of these over the next 2 years, so one each quarter. basically summarize the steps to the road of recovery. So the first step, the R in recovery, stands for realize. Realize that I'm not God. I admit I'm powerless to control my tendency to do the wrong thing, and my life is unmanageable. Do you ever stay up late when you know you need sleep? Do you ever eat or drink more calories than your body needs? Do you ever feel like you ought to exercise, but you don't? Do you ever know the right thing to do, but you don't do it? Do you ever know something is wrong, but you do it anyway? Have you ever known you should be unselfish, but you're selfish instead? Have you ever tried to control somebody or something and found it was uncontrollable? If your answer is yes to any of those questions, welcome to the human race. We're all in need of recovery. So the cause of our problem, the Bible has a word for this cause. The Bible calls that tendency my sin nature. My sin nature gets me into all kinds of problems, and it gets you into all kinds of problems. I do things that aren't good for me. I do them even when they're self-destructive. I don't do things that are good for me. I do them, I respond the wrong way when I'm hurt, just in case it just increases the hurt rather than lessening it. I react the wrong way to people. I treat them in wrong ways, and then it backfires. And when I know it's not going to work anyway, I try to fix problems, and often when I fix them, they're worse than when I started. Proverbs 14 says, "There's a way that seems right to a man, but it ends in death." You will always have this sin nature within you, the desire to do what's wrong. You're always going to have it until you get to heaven. Even after you become a Christian, you still have that desire that pulls you the wrong way. Paul understood this. In Romans 7:15, he said, "I don't understand myself at all, for I really want to do what is right, but I can't. I do what I don't want to do, but what I hate. I know perfectly well what I'm doing is wrong, but I can't help myself. It is the sin inside of me that is stronger than I am that makes me do these evil things." Does that sound vaguely familiar? I end up doing what I don't want to do and end up not doing what I do want to do. The first step to recovery is you must understand the cause of this problem. Why does this happen in my life? You need to understand the cause of it, then the consequences of the problem, and then the cure. What is the cause of my problem? The cause of all the problems is this. I want to be God. Okay. Would you like to decide what's right and what's wrong? You say, "I don't want anybody telling me what's right, what's wrong. I want to decide what's right and wrong. I want to call my own shots. I want to make my own rules. I want to put myself at the center of the universe. I want to be my own boss. I want to live my own way. If it feels good, do it. I don't want anyone telling me what to do with my life." That's called playing God. And what it says is, I want to control. And the more insecure you are, the more driven you are to control. The more insecure you are, you want to control yourself, control other people, to control your environment. You're driven to do this, and it's called playing God. This is man's oldest problem. Adam and Eve had it when God put them in paradise and they tried to control paradise. God said, "You can do anything you want in this entire paradise except one thing. Don't eat from this certain tree." And what did they do? They made a beeline for the tree. And the only thing that God said was off limits. Satan said, "Eat this apple," or whatever it was, "and become gods." And it's been the problem from the very, very, very start. I want to be God. I want to call the shots. I want to run my own life. We want to be in control. How do we play God? By denying our humanity. By trying to control everything for selfish reasons. I want to be at the center of my universe. Control is the real issue. I want to be in control, and we try to control ourselves, other people, everything around us. How do we play God? Got four notes on that, for those of you that like to take notes. We try to control our image. You want to control what other people think of you. You don't want other people to really know what you're like. We play games. We wear masks. We pretend. We fake it. We want people to see certain sides of us, but not necessarily other parts. And we deny our weaknesses and we deny our feelings. Oh, I'm not angry. I'm not upset. I'm not worried. I'm not afraid. You know? We don't want people to see the real us. Why am I afraid to tell you who I am? That's the title of a book. And the answer is, if I tell you who I really am and you don't like it, tough for me, because that's all I got. So we try to hide it, and we try to control our image. Number two, we try to control other people. Parents try to control kids. Kids try to control parents. Wives try to control husbands. Husbands try to control wives. People try to control other people. You know, there are office politics in your office. Countries try to control other countries. We use a lot of different tools to manipulate each other. We use guilt to control. We use fear. We use praise. Some of us use the silent treatment to control, or anger, or rage. We definitely try to control people. The third, why? We try to control problems, our problems. We're good at this. We use phrases like, I can handle it, it's not really a problem. That's somebody trying to play God. I can handle it, I'm okay, I'm fine. We control our problems. I don't need any help, and I certainly don't need counseling. We try to control our problems. I can quit anytime. I'll work on it on my own. The more you try to fix your problem, the worse it gets. Number four, we try to control our pain. Have you ever thought about how much time we spend running from pain, trying to avoid it, deny it, escape it, reduce it, postpone it? People try to postpone it in many ways. Sometimes we postpone our pain by eating or not eating. Or we try to postpone our pain by getting drunk or smoking or doing drugs or by getting in and out of relationships. This next relationship is what I really need to feel whole and significant. And then you get in that relationship, oh, that wasn't it, and you get out, and it's in and out and in and out of one relationship after another. Or you develop some kind of compulsive habit trying to control your pain. Or you become abusive and you get angry with other people, or critical and judgmental to hide your pain, or you get depressed. There are many, many ways we try to control our pain. Pain comes when we realize in our quiet moments that we're not God, and we can't control everything, and that's scary. I remember a long time ago on Saturday Night Live, Chevy Chase used to come on and say, "Hi, I'm Chevy Chase, and you're not." And I can just imagine God saying that. "Hi, I'm God, and you're not." That's basically the first step to recovery. You're not going to get well on your own. Face it. Don't deny it. Number two, what are the consequences of playing God? There's basically four problems that always happen when you try to play God. Number one, fear. When I try to control everything, I get afraid. Adam said, "I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid." We are afraid that someone's going to find out who we really are, that we're fakes, we're phonies, that we really don't have it together, that we're not so perfect. So I don't want to let anyone get real close to me because they'll find out that I'm scared inside. And so we fake it and pretend and fill our lives with fear, afraid that somebody's going to reject us and not love us. Or they'll just not like us because they don't really know what I'm like. They only like an image of me. If they really knew what I was like, they wouldn't like me. So I resent that. And we're filled with fear when we try to play God. Number two, it's frustrating trying to be the general manager of the universe. You know, when I was younger, we used to go to Chuck E. Cheese, and there was a game there, mallet game, and basically you have these things sticking up and you hit them down. And the moment you hit one down, another one pops up, and it's frustrating because every time you slam something down, another one pops up, and you slam it down, another one pops up. And that's life. We whack down one compulsion, and another one pops up. We whack down one problem, and another one comes up. We whack down one relational conflict, and another one pops up. And it's so frustrating because you can't get them all knocked down at the same time. You walk around pretending you're God. I'm powerful. I can handle it. If you're so powerful, why don't you just unplug the machine? Frustration. Yeah. Paul realized this. He said, it seems to be a fact of life that when I want to do what is right, I inevitably do what is wrong. Something else is deep within me, that war with my mind that wins the fight and makes me a slave to sin. David understood it. He said, my dishonesty has made me miserable and filled my days with frustration. If you're frustrated, it's a symptom of a deeper problem that you have not dealt with. The root issue is you're not God, and you're trying to control everything, and that doesn't work. And that leads us to the next one. Number three, fatigue. It's tiring playing God, trying to control everything, pretending you've got it all together. Denial takes a lot of energy. In Psalms 32, David said, my strength evaporated like water on a sunny day until I finally admitted all my sins to you and stopped trying to hide them. Most people try to hide their pain and run from their pain by keeping busy because we think, I don't like the way I feel when I slow down, or I don't like the sounds running through my mind, or when I lay down on the pillow, I keep going. Just gotta keep busy. And you run from the pain by constantly being on the go. You work yourself to death at work, or you get some hobby or some sport, and it becomes compulsion. And you're on the golf course all the time, or you're in the tennis court, or somewhere all the time. Or you can get involved in religious activities. Church can hide pain. You're hoping you'll be so tired that when you lay down your head on that pillow, you'll be fatigued so much, you'll go to sleep, and you won't have to hear your pain. If you're in a constant state of fatigue, always worn out, ask yourself, what pain am I running from? What problem do I not want to face up to that motivates me and drives me to work and work so that I'm in constant state of fatigue? And the last thing on here is for failure. When you try to play God, that's one job description you're guaranteed to fail. In Proverbs 28:13, it says, you'll never succeed in life if you try to hide your sins. Confess them, give them up, then God will show you mercy. You need to be honest and open about your weakness and your fault and your failures. Here at OVBC, from the beginning, I think we've committed to becoming a safe place where people, real people, can talk about problems, real hurts, real hang-ups, real habits, and not be blown away by judgment. We're a family of fellow strugglers. There's not a person in this room that has it all together. We're all weak in different areas. We need each other. In fact, we need each other because we become mirrors to reveal each other's hurts and to help each other. Many times, others don't see what I see and vice versa. We've developed an atmosphere, in fact. We have a service coming up in January on Friday nights called Celebrate Recovery. In that group, we've already been working over the last year, and we have all kinds of different people with different problems and hurts that they've been dealing with who are all working these steps together. Today I have two testimonies I'm going to share with you from the original Celebrate Recovery group, from two very different people with very different problems who worked the same process towards recovery. The first is a lady, and her name is Mary Pritchard, and here it is. I'm a recovering codependent. I'm the oldest child of five in a family of five, and I would like to say that I had a very normal childhood. There was no alcohol or drug abuse in my family, but it wasn't perfect. We had a communication problem. My mother was verbally and emotionally abusive to me. She would scream and yell at me and say things that absolutely devastated me, and I felt worthless. I was so afraid of her anger, I thought, I'll do anything, Mom, to keep you happy so that you won't be angry with me. So I began telling my mother and father that I thought what I thought they wanted to hear, and I began to be what I thought they wanted me to be. I became a plastic person. That was the beginning of my codependency. That style of communication into my marriage. And in the first 6 months of my marriage, I was verbally and emotionally abusive to my husband. And he didn't respond. So I thought, I can fix this. I decided that I would just absolutely withdraw and wouldn't confront him in anything. And that made me sick. Forget this. I'll just go on about my business, and so I did. I'm a nurse in the Navy, and I had an opportunity to go to alcohol awareness at the Navy Hospital at Long Beach as a visiting professional. While I was there, I learning about the disease of alcoholism, which I clearly did not have, I recognized that there was something terribly, terribly wrong with me. The sense of worthlessness just overwhelmed me. I knew that people were going to find out about the real me and that they would hate me, and that they would want nothing to do with me. I knew that if I left there without asking for help, I might never find the answer to my problem. So I asked to stay as a patient, and they allowed me to do that. My husband joined me in therapy there. When the counselors began to ask me about my problems and my life, I said, oh, everything's fine with me. I have it all together. It's him who has a problem. Because my denial was so strong about my part of our difficulties that they had to let me go. They couldn't help us. So I went back to work thinking, this is a bad dream. I put it behind me and I started working hard again. I was very busy. I became pregnant for the second time with twins. 6 months after the boys were born, I became profoundly depressed and suicidal. I was working a full-time job outside my home, raising three children, and I was nursing these boys. Of course, I didn't tell my husband how I felt. We weren't really communicating about too much of anything. But I did have a good sense to tell my pastor what I was thinking about taking my life. And he said, I'd like to suggest that you talk to a therapist. I thought, I'm not worth spending the money on to go see a therapist. I finally got to the place I was so miserable and in so much pain that I was willing to do anything that might help me, because I knew that I wasn't much longer for this world. So I went, and I could no longer deny the truth of my life. I told her about all the pain and misery that I was and what I was doing, and she acknowledged that truth, and she loved me and accepted me and began to teach me how to deal effectively with my life and my problems. And I'm really grateful for her. God began to bring other people into my life to acknowledge that theirs wasn't perfect either, and that they were going to a thing called 12 steps, and that had helped them deal with life. I thought, I'll try it, because obviously I have been able to fix my own life. So I began attending 12-step meetings. I met other people who acknowledged that they weren't in control of their lives either. They seemed happy and joyous. I hung around. I've had an opportunity to participate in Celebrate Recovery, and I want you to know it's a wonderful place. There are safe people there. It's safe, and I hope you'll join me. There, we're all becoming joyous and free. Now, the second testimony I'd like to share is from Dana Denton. I'm Dana. I'm an addict. This is the face of addiction. I'm also a husband, a best friend of my wife, a father, a stepfather. I'm a loving son, a brother. I went to college, graduated law school. I own my own business. But today, the most important thing that you should know about me is that by the grace of God, I'm a grateful recovering addict. Real easy story to share with you today. It's boring. It's so simple. I was 12 years old. I smoked my first cigarette. I did it in a bunker behind the third hole at the El Dorado golf course in Long Beach. When I was in seventh grade, they had this thing called the Walter B. Hill Day at Walter B. Hill Junior High School. And three of my friends said, oh, we got some beer. I had my first beer. I liked it. It set me free. It was fun. I was relaxed. I was funny. People liked me. Then I started getting drunk every week or every weekend with the boys just to be cool. I matured into like martinis and dope and drugs. 16 months ago, my wife and I went out to our favorite place for happy hour, and we got into a fight. What a surprise. When we got home, she looked at me in the eye and said, you love alcohol and you love drugs more than you love me. It was the truth. I'd like to tell you, I got religion. I said, I'm an alcoholic, I'll change. She left me, and I didn't do that. What I did do is call a friend, and we went out and got drunk. And that's what I did. I got drunk for the next 3 weeks. On a Saturday morning, the day my 12-year-old son was to be baptized at 3 a.m., I was sitting alone, naked, empty beer bottles all around me, empty cigarette packs, opening a package of cocaine to kill myself. I looked around. What am I doing here? What happened to my dreams? Who stole them? That's when I admitted I was powerless. I managed my life all wrong. I tried to pray. They say in space no one can hear you scream. I'd cut myself off pretty completely. But something kept telling me, you gotta get help. I got on the phone, I called my sister. I remember a member of Saddleback and her dear sweet husband. They spent the rest of the week, or that day, making sure that I got help I needed, and that the help, and that help was and still is founded in the 12 steps. The journey of the 12 steps began in defeat and ended in victory, because in 15 months, I took the 12 steps and they led me to the foot of the cross. When I got there, I was empty and he was waiting for me. He said, welcome home, welcome home. We've got a lot of work to do. Today, my life is blessed. I've got a lot of work, but the joy I have is I'm a member of Saddleback Valley Community Baptist, or Community Church. I was baptized here by Pastor Tom, and he tells me it took. So I'm also privileged to be a small group leader at Celebrate Recovery, where we meet every Friday night. If you're that one person who needs to hear what I'm saying, I know you're here, because I wouldn't be up here if you weren't. If you're that one person that needs to hear it, come join us where we celebrate our recovery. Now, there's how do you react to these two stories? There's two ways to not react to these stories. Okay. Number one, my problem's not that bad. And that's called denial. How bad does it have to get before you need to admit that you need some help? How bad does that hurt, that relationship, that pain, that problem, that memory have to get before you admit that you need help? Unfortunately, it's human behavior, human nature, that will never get to change our pain until our pain becomes greater than the fear of change. We don't change when we see light. We change when we feel the heat, and the marriage starts to fall apart, or the kids start going off the wrong way, or you get on that phone call in the middle of the night. Save yourself some pain. Start early in recovery. One man said, it happened to me when the acid of my pain finally ate through the wall of my denial. God whispers to us in our pleasures, but he shouts to us in our pain. Pain is God's megaphone. Let it motivate you to get help, to face the issue that you've been ignoring 10, 20, maybe 30 years. How's your pain level? It's a warning. Listen. Number two, the second reaction is, that's fine, but I can solve my problems. This series is for somebody else. That's denial too. Unless you've lived a perfect life, there are some things that you need to deal with. You say, I can handle my problem. I can take care of it. The fact is, if you could handle it, you would have, but you can't, so you won't. If you could have handled that problem, it wouldn't be a problem, and you wouldn't still have it today. But you can't, so you won't. This denial is as old as Adam and Eve. They had a problem. They ran and hid behind a bush. God made them, and God made the bush, and they're hiding from God. How silly is that? You know, sometimes I talk to people and say, have you told God about your hurt, or your habit, or your hang-up? And the response is, oh no, I wouldn't want him to know about it. You can get fixed till you fess up and face your faults and admit it. I'm powerless. Now, number three, the cure. The first step on the road to recovery is to admit my powerlessness. The Bible says that in admitting my weakness, I find strength. This is not a popular idea here in self-sufficient American culture, which says, rise yourself up by your own bootstraps. Don't depend on anybody else. Do the Lone Ranger thing. But this is the essential first step to getting your act together. Admit that you're powerless to do it on your own, that you need other people, and that you need God. Admitting I'm not God means I recognize three important facts of life, and maturity comes when you recognize these three facts of life. One, I admit that I am powerless to change my past. It hurt. I still remember it. But all the resentment in the world isn't going to change it. I am powerless to change my past. Number two, I admit that I am powerless to control other people. I try. I like to manipulate them. I use all kinds of little gimmicks, but it doesn't work. I am responsible for my actions, not theirs. I can't control other people. And number three, I admit that I'm powerless to cope with my harmful habits, behaviors, and actions. Good intentions just aren't enough. How many times have I tried and failed? Willpower is not enough. You need something more than willpower. You need a source of power beyond yourself. You need God because He made you to need Him. John 4:6 says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Grace is the power to change. Grace is the power that God gives us, or gives me, to make changes in my life that I want to make and that He wants me to make, the power to change. For you to recover from your hurts, habits, and hangups, and hassles in your life, you need God's grace. How do you get it? Only one way. He gives it to the humble. Let me ask you, what do you guys need to change in your life? What hurt or habit or hang-up have you been trying to ignore? For many of us, this is the hardest step. And I'm glad it's number one, because once you get over this, over the hump, and that is just to admit it, I have a problem, I have a need, I have a hurt. It's hard for many of us to admit that because it's humbling. It says, I'm not God, I don't have it all together. If you tell that to somebody, they're not going to be surprised because they know it. God knows it, and you know it. You just got to admit it. It means being honest and facing up to problems that you've wanted to ignore for a long time. So I'm going to go ahead and say thank you for joining me in this, and I look forward to the next 8 sessions if I get the chance. Let's go ahead and gather together into an Ohana circle, and we will...